Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
A look at what's happening across Connecticut. Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Governor Lamont is on every other Friday, but for some reason today, Governor Lamont, wow. I am flooded with questions for you. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. It's been a while.
It has. It's good to have you, though. No, I love when you come on, and you're very good about coming on every other week with your busy schedule. I really do appreciate it, so thank you. I'm just going to go down the list. Is that okay? I'm going to try not to bop around. I'll try to keep things in the same categories, but I'm gonna just do my best to get through as many as I can. Is that cool?
That's cool.
All right, great. Let's start with catalytic converters, because this was the first question I got, and I think it's a great question. So kudos. We have this new legislation in place that's going to crack down on catalytic converter thefts. Excellent. Love the idea of it. But I thought this was a great question. Governor, what stops thieves from just crossing state borders, going into New York or Massachusetts, Rhode Island, wherever, and still being able to commit the crimes, like being able to sell those parts, just not here in Connecticut?
That's a great question. That's why I do everything I can on a regional basis. I mean, we can really slow down the theft of catalytic converters if there's no way to fence this stuff. And that's what the legislation did, made it really tough to go to a body shop or something. You have to be able to tell where that catalytic converter came from. But if all you got to do is go into Westchester County and somebody will pick it up, it doesn't work. So we're working closely with our friends in the neighboring states. And, you know, more broadly, it's too easy to fence this stuff. I mean, you have these shoplifters now, and they'd steal like 500 packages of diapers. And you'd go, what the heck is that all about? But they can go on eBay and resell them within 48 hours. So that's what you got to shut down, is the ability to fence this stuff, sell this stuff.
But it sounds like you are in talks with our neighboring states to hopefully they'd potentially follow your lead and do something similar, just so that we could combat this happening even more.
That's right. It'll take a little while, but we're all on the same track. We all have the same motives.
Okay, excellent. All right, so let's go to the next thing. Let's just get right into abortion, because I know that that's going to come up multiple times. So let's dive into it. So we've heard now from your opponent. We know Bob Stefanowski says if he were to be the next governor, he does not plan to get rid of the law that you signed. He likes the fact that Connecticut is a safe place, that we're protecting our patients, we're protecting our doctors. The only thing he seems to have an issue with is parental consent. And I know you had commented on it, and I wanted to talk about it here on the show. Do you think it's appropriate that kids 16 and under don't get parental consent? However, when they want to get a medical procedure or even a tattoo, they'd still have to get parental consent.
First of all, I support Roe v. Wade. I think it was well argued. It was, very bipartisan. It's been the law of the land, and it's the law of the state of Connecticut. I'd like to see it continue. I don't want any new restrictions added on to women's rights, especially when it comes to reproductive rights. It even, required notification. These are just new restrictions on Roe v. Wade, which I don't think is appropriate. And by the way, Melissa, 98% plus of, young girls or women who maybe need those reproductive services seek an abortion, do talk to a parent. In those 1% or 2% of the cases where they don't, there may be a really real reason why that's the case. And what do I do to that girl? I mean, do you prosecute her if she goes ahead, and you prosecute the doctor? I'd leave Roe v. Wade alone. I think it makes it's worked pretty well. And by the way, rate of abortion is as low as it's been in 40 years.
No question. And I think that the facts that you're saying are absolutely accurate. I'm just wondering, Governor, if there is like a compromise. So I agree with you. There's going to be 9 out of 10 girls are perfectly comfortable going to their mom and saying, hey, you know what? I know you don't like this idea. I don't feel comfortable, but I got to talk to you about this. Let's work through it. And you're going to have that one girl who's like, I do not have a good relationship with my parents. It's whatever the case may be. However, do you make a compromise there and find, you know, somewhere in the legislation that you need to have an adult who's a certain age or something, like either a guidance counselor, an aunt, somebody to sign off and just say, hey, I really spoke with my daughter about this. We worked through it, I spoke to this young woman about this. We worked through it. We weighed out her options. Because you are, you know, if you're talking about a 13, 14-year-old, I mean, they really have a lot of emotions and a lot of thoughts, and they probably can't even work through it. They're not even fully developed yet. So what about a compromise of, like, having an adult or of some sorts, you know, saying, yes, they can get an abortion? What about that?
Look, we can look into it, but a law is not the answer to everything. What we have done is made counselors available and recommend counselors, and, you know, especially for younger girls. But like I said, 98% already go to mom. And that other 2%, they really do need some counseling, and we make that readily available.
We're talking this morning to Governor Lamont. And one more question. It's kind of related, but I see how the person is connecting it, but I think it's more of just wondering where your thoughts are on it. You know, the governor, we know you very much support a woman's right to abortion and have made your way to make sure that you support them. Thank you for that. But in this case, why do you not have support for assisted suicide, which failed again this year?
I generally want government getting out of the way. I don't want politicians getting between a woman and her doctor when it comes to abortion rights. I don't think we need the government getting in the way of somebody or family at the end of life. But it started its way through the legislature, didn't get there. They brought it up many times before, and that my hunch is it will pass at some point.
Okay, so I just want to clarify for people. So if it did get through the legislature, you would sign it?
Yes.
Oh, you would. Okay, so there you go. All right, Governor Lamont is here this morning, and we are taking your questions, and we have questions really all over the place. Let's now dive into heating oil. You know, as we talk about the heat, different thing, but heating oil, luckily we are going into the warmer part of the year, but Governor, question, you know, what are we doing about the massive jump in home heating oil? It's now well over $6 a gallon for most people.
Yeah, it won't be as big an issue for the next few months, but it's going to be a big issue this winter. Mm-hmm. There's a global dislocation in terms of heating oil, and the price has gone through the roof. We've got a variety of government supports out there for people that can't afford it. Make sure they can stay safe. You can go to 211 and get the information you need there.
Okay, and then as far as, I mean, I know this is a question more on the gas, and I think you and I had touched on this last week, but there are no plans to eliminate or make diesel gas more affordable, correct? Because that's mostly, you were saying, for a population that's coming from out of state. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's look, I've got to pay for roads and bridges. There's no such thing as a free road. And the tax on diesel is one of the ways we help pay for it. Obviously, we got the third in the state to get the gasoline tax cut. We've got that continued through December 1. We got free bus service, which is remarkable. A lot of folks getting out of a car and more likely to take the bus now than they were beforehand. Diesel, we'll keep an eye on it. I talked to the farmers. I know how incredibly costly it is for them, but how you tailor this takes a little bit of work, and make sure we don't gut the transportation fund.
Talking to Governor Lamont this morning, another one, Governor, do you support changing 830G in order to protect small towns from overdeveloping and preserving green spaces?
Yeah, what we've got now through legislation is, I think they call it 830J. And what that says is, we gave resources to our towns, say, you tell us what your 10-year plan is. Tell us how you plan to get there, and that relieves you from the 830G pressure. And we've got dozens of towns saying, look, if we were going to do a little more concentrated development, we want to do it here and not there. So you maintain the local control. I think that's very important.
I was going to say, I think that's the big thing I want people to hear you're saying. So you want to make sure towns, municipalities are at the center of these decisions. It's not developers just doing what they want.
I don't want developers doing just what they want, and I want our municipalities to take the lead on this. We give them incentives to take the lead. Melissa, when I talk to businesses, they say, look, it's great that Connecticut's a wonderful place, and when I have 1.5 kids and a half an acre of land or an acre of land, that's wonderful. But I need the 20-somethings, and the 20-somethings need a studio. They need a little bit of downtown life. Or else, if you can't make sure they have a place to live, I don't think I can put my business here. So it is important that we do the right things, but I want that under local control.
Well, and the hard thing, too, I agree with you, Governor. I think it's incredibly hard to find what it sounds like is affordable housing. But a lot of these developers, when they do put developments up, it's not even really what I'd consider affordable. It's really not. When they only have to do 10% or whatever the number is of their whole complex being affordable, that's really not giving a lot of options to people. It's still expensive.
It is, but that 10% helps. It allows a teacher, a fireman, a cop actually to live in the town where they work, which I think is incredibly valuable. And like I said, if those other units are studios and one bedrooms and two bedrooms, they are a lot less expensive than having a 2-acre house out in the boonies there, which is often what people think of as their other option when they come to Connecticut.
Governor Lamont is here. COVID numbers are going back up again. We have to be well over 14% only because doctors say we can't account for the tests that are being taken at home. But it's high. We're back up to, the highest we've been since February. Any concerns, any chances that you are bringing back as soon as this happens, Governor? It's always the question. Are you planning on bringing back any mandates or doing anything, anything you're working on?
No. People have the tools to keep themselves safe. Obviously we say, if you're showing any symptoms, get tested. If you're showing any symptoms, please don't go to a big crowded area. If you go to work and you're not quite sure, maybe be more likely to wear the mask, show respect for others. But most importantly, you have the ability to keep yourself safe now. That wasn't true, say a year and a half ago. Get that booster if you haven't gotten that yet. I think we'll get through this. I think we're beginning to flatten the curve, but it's still very early to say. But I'm hopeful it's going to be a good summer. I do worry a little bit about the fall because that is the flu season.
And Governor Lamont, I'm curious, as we're, again, we haven't even gotten the green light for under 5-year-olds to get the COVID vaccine, but another question has come in. What are the chances, or is it too soon to ask this, what are the chances that the COVID vaccine is going to become required for public school students?
I don't think there's any plans for that as yet, but I listened to the public health experts. But you know how emotional the argument got, and thankfully, voluntarily, we are probably the most vaccinated state in the country. So it's working. We don't need mandates.
And then let's just end with mental health. We know that once again, our senators who are in Washington, D.C., like Blumenthal and Chris Murphy, the two of them are, again, trying to speak to legislation about, cracking down on ghost guns, cracking down on some of these assault weapons, especially when you see what happened in Buffalo. But the question I always wonder is, would we potentially here in Connecticut, we can't speak for the whole country, but here in Connecticut, would we ever bring back mental health facilities like hospitals? It was something we had in the 80s, and then we've done away with them. Everywhere has. Have we considered having long-term answers like facilities come back to Connecticut?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we've moved more towards community-based. In our big mental health bill passed with our friends in the legislature, community-based also means clinics in many of our schools. So we have social workers there, first line of defense, somebody that kids can talk to as they need. Weren't you shocked, though, in Buffalo that kid just a year and a half earlier had written that really angry treatise where he talked about murdering people, and
well,
they gave him an evaluation and then said, oh, never mind.
But that's the
that wasn't happening in Connecticut.
Well, that's the concern, and that's why I'm wondering, how do you avoid that? Because that's just it. I mean, a year ago, he had a murder-suicide plan on his graduation, and he got cleared. And now, a year later, 10 people are dead. And I'm wondering if even just sitting down with a counselor, is that really enough? Or do we need, facilities? I mean, this kid clearly needed to go and see someone for a long time. It couldn't just be a one session, one and done. Oh, I guess he's not a big deal. I guess it's not, because he was. It was a big deal, and we missed it. I mean, we didn't, but he was missed is what I'm saying.
He was missed. I'm not sure having a big institution would have made a big difference. I'd like to think that here in Connecticut, the red flags are such that we'd be more likely to see it. You can buy that AR-15 in New York. You can't buy that here in Connecticut. You know, that's what happened in Sandy Hook as well. But it just reminds you that we've got to be so aware of these mental health challenges and all these Me Too crimes. If I could change one thing, stop announcing this kid's name. Just keep him anonymous. I don't want anybody else thinking, oh, look at all the notoriety he got.
Governor Lamont, we really appreciate you coming on. I'm so sorry we've run out of time because I still have a whole page of questions, but I know you'll be back, and I so appreciate you giving us the time. Thank
you. See you in a couple weeks, Melissa. Thanks.
Sounds good.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you. Melissa in the Morning welcomes Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Congressman. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Doing fine. Thank you.
So I do want to talk about baby formula shortages. We will get to that in a second. However, I really quickly wanted to get to this before we get to next week. For people who don't know, in the past 2 years, the federal government has been able to turn away migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border using a public emergency health order, which was known as Title 42. Now, that is expiring on Monday. It was initially launched by the Trump administration. It has continued with the Biden administration. And essentially, the CDC had recently said they were going to end Title 42 because COVID cases were decreasing and vaccines were widely available. Do you agree with it expiring, especially with cases going back up and honestly all the issues we're seeing at the border? Are there efforts to extend it? What can you say about this?
Yeah, I think here, Melissa, we need to be driven by the facts and the science, right? And, you know, immigration all too often gets turned into just, you know, a club that we use against each other, depending on, you know, what political party you're in. I can tell you this, you know, regardless of COVID, if we're going to change that protocol and allow people to come across the border and be detained, which is what happens when you don't have this Title 42 in place, we better have a plan for that, meaning, you know, there are huge detention facilities along the border, and we need to make sure, particularly since COVID is not gone, that if people are going to be detained and put into those facilities, that we've got enough room for that to happen. You know, and then they get processed, and, you know, unless there's a valid claim for them to be in the country, they get sent back. But we need a plan, and it's not clear to me that we have that. And there's a lot of both Republicans and Democrats in the Congress saying, look, whatever you think about going back to normal, pre-COVID normal, let's make sure that we understand what's about to happen, because what's not tolerable is that now you sort of fill up those detention centers. A COVID wave goes through that doesn't just put the detainees at risk. It puts obviously our CBP and other people at risk. So the short answer to your question is, Melissa, until we have a plan and have some sense of what's going to happen, we shouldn't be lifting, making that change.
Okay. Because I mean, and I like what you said, because let's be real, the, you know, the issues with the border, the drugs, things like that, that is not why Title 42 was put into place. And so I just want to make sure that that is differentiated. That is a whole separate issue. But as far as COVID cases are concerned, I think that that is a recipe for disasters. When we've seen even in our own jail systems here in Connecticut, just for example, in the very beginning, waves of COVID going through. And look, I know people, you know, when they hear inmates, they think, oh, who cares? But, you know, we had a lot of people die in our prisons here in Connecticut because we didn't have a handle on it. And there were no vaccines at the time. But I think this is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. I mean, this is not about the larger issue of, you know, keeping illegal migrants outside of the country. That has been a problem for a very long time. And as long as we, you know, pay 15 times the wages that Guatemala pays, it's going to continue to be a problem until we sort of figure out how to manage that. This is really about a temporary measure. And by the way, I hope what you said is not true. I hope people don't look at inmates and say it doesn't matter for them, right? You know, these are people too.
I agree with you. Unfortunately, a lot of people do. A lot of people do see it that way. It's sad. I agree with you. I agree. Yeah. Listen, as a Christian, just as a Christian, forget politics. Just as a Christian, a human is a human, in my opinion. And I think there's a family, there's a loved one attached to every inmate. So somebody, I agree with what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying, but a lot of people don't see it that way.
Yeah, I hope it's not a lot of people. I mean, again, I've met some of these, you know, I've been in these detention centers. They're federally run facilities. And the one thing, by the way, there's lots of ways of looking at the immigration debate. And, you know, we should be listening to smart ideas from all sides because it's a big problem, right? Mm-hmm. And it has been for generations now. The piece we can't allow to have happen, and sadly it does, is that we dehumanize these people. You know, and by the way, when we say these people, it's the guy who's mowing your lawn. It's the guy who's painting your house. It's the folks who are washing the dishes in our restaurants. And you go see them in these detention facilities. You know, you said you're a Christian. These are, by and large, you know, Christian South Americans who just want to escape horrible conditions in places like El Salvador, do what our ancestors did, come to the, you know, the land of promise and opportunity. So anyway, I don't want to get on a high horse here. I just want to say let's have a good, robust conversation about how to handle immigration in our border, but let's not dehumanize folks and say that it's okay for them to die just because they're inside a detention facility.
I couldn't agree with you more. We're talking to Congressman Himes this morning, and shifting gears really quick, Congressman Himes, I wanted to talk a little bit about baby formula shortages. Because you and I were just starting to dive into this last week and we ran out of time. I do know there are efforts to make it better. I know the FDA right now was grilled yesterday by lawmakers for understandable reasons. What are you gathering from these talks from the FDA, and what can we do to broaden our marketplace? I know you were saying last week, like, hey, we have a free market. Nobody's saying, hey, you can't manufacture here. But what do we do to bolster it so we can avoid this next time around?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of lessons for everybody here, you know, the private sector and for government, because I think there, as you unpack this thing, you see that, you know, a whole bunch of bad decisions got made. The good news, and I want to be a little careful about saying this because, again, you know, predicting the future is always a little bit dicey. But,
sure.
You know, between the president invoking the Emergency Production Act, between Congress, just yesterday we passed a bill that would allow the FDA to really accelerate its ability to test and confirm that formula is safe to import. Formula. My fingers are crossed that this is an issue that goes away in the next couple of weeks. That's obviously cold comfort to folks who are looking on shelves right now. But hopefully, this problem is starting to get into the rearview mirror. But to answer your question directly, Melissa, you know, number one, we got to be real thoughtful about some of the outcomes in the market. You know, when one plant from one manufacturer in the state of Michigan goes down, and it got shut down for good reasons, right? You know, they found a deadly bacteria in their formula. Some babies died. Now, to be fair, it hasn't been traced necessarily to that formula. They're still doing the investigation. But when you can shut down one plant in Michigan and boom, you have a national shortage, you got to think about whether that's a wise outcome. The mm-hmm. The thing I would point to the government on, because like I said, there's lessons for a lot of people here, including the producers of the formula. You know, our government has been, in my opinion, overly restrictive on the import of European formula. Now, European formula is as good as American formula, but they label it differently, right? We take our labels very seriously. If there's, you know, whatever, we want to know what the nutrition is. We want to know what the ingredients are. Europe does it slightly differently. To me, you know, we're talking about Europe here, right, whose regulatory standards are often higher than our own. Mm. To me, we got to loosen that restriction in a smart way. But
that's a good idea.
Anyway,
yeah.
My point is that there's a lot of lessons here for a lot of people, and it never should have happened. I mean, it's frankly embarrassing that the country let it get to a point where mothers, especially under the conditions they're in right now. Remember, you know, it's only yesterday or 2 days ago that the FDA approved a vaccine for people under 5, right? And I know
right.
A lot of my constituents have been going nuts because they, you know, they're terrified that their kid could get COVID. So when they've got that amount of stress to carry around, they do not need the additional stress of not being able to find formula.
Yeah. I mean, does it seem like, Congressman Himes, we are nearing that possibility that we are just going to make that kind of regulatory to start bringing in formula from places like Europe?
Yeah, we should. We should. We should never let a labeling issue interfere. It seems so minor.
Yeah.
I don't want to Fox News this, right? You know, this isn't some, you know, bureaucrat making evil decisions. It's done with the best of intentions to make sure that when we import baby formula, we know what's in it. That's fair enough, right? But this is an example of creating a rigidity that when things go wrong, when that Abbott plant shuts down in Michigan, it creates a lot of pain for people. And so there's some work to do to revisit our policies there, no question.
Congressman Himes, we appreciate you popping on this morning. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Melissa. Take care.
All right. A physician with the economic prescription for Connecticut. Dr. Michael Goldstein is here. He was running the a congressional candidate for the 4th District of Connecticut. He is hoping to get his name on the primary ballot for August to go up against Jamie Stevenson, who was basically backed by the Republican Party at the convention weekend and is ultimately supposed to go up against Congressman Jim Himes. Dr. Goldstein is not done and would like to get that opportunity to really have his platform heard and to get that shot at taking that seat. So good morning to you, Dr. Goldstein. We are so glad you're here. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Good morning to you as well.
So, Michael, tell us a little bit about who you are for people who are not familiar.
Sure. So I live in Greenwich. I'm a practicing physician. Actually, my specialty is ophthalmology. I've worked in New York most of my life. I've also, later in life, I went to law school and became an attorney and have written, you know, articles about healthcare. And I worked in healthcare firms on a part-time basis. I've been active in the New York County and New York State Medical Societies. I've been a board member of the New York County Medical Society. I've been the president of the board. I've also currently the chairman of their board of trustees. I've been, you know, an active member of the community in Greenwich. I have two grown sons. I've served on the board of Temple Shalom in Greenwich it's a 6-year term, which I've done. So I've been somebody that's served the community in many, many ways. I've seen politics from the side of advocacy or lobbying for healthcare issues, and I realize that the system doesn't really work in a lot of ways, that if you don't have either a lot of money or a lot of voters behind you, you pretty much have very little to say. And I think that we need a government that actually listens to the people and a government that's of the people. And I think that, you know, what we have, unfortunately, is a political class, people who are essentially professional politicians, who would, as you know, the longer they stay in politics, the more I believe they become detached from the people. And I think that as a result, a lot of things happen in our society, as we can see now, that are actually harmful, that were also unnecessary.
So it's interesting. First of all, Michael, you sound really successful, and it sounds like you live a really great life. Why even enter the political realm?
Well, I've always believed in doing good and helping others. As physicians, we're basically healers. We're people that actually ultimately want to help people. I mean, I've given time to, you know, treating people in clinics that have, you know, are economically disadvantaged. I've also on the board of my medical school, which is located in Brooklyn, where we provide scholarships and grants to economically disadvantaged students. And I've always believed that, you know, you always want to contribute to the society. This is a great country, and it stays a great country only because ordinary people step up and help others.
It's interesting what you said. We're talking to Michael Goldstein. And Michael is running as a congressional candidate for the 4th District of Connecticut as a Republican, and is still hoping to get on the ballot for the primary in August. And right now we know the Republican Party has backed Republican Jamie Stevenson, who's the former first elect woman of Darien, and to go up essentially against Congressman Jim Himes. So, you know what I find interesting about what you're saying, Michael, is it's so true. When, for anyone who doesn't know, why would you know? When I first got on the phone with Michael earlier this week, I think it was, "Hey, do you know who I am?" That was the first thing Michael said to me. And it was amazing because I said, you sound familiar, but I really don't know who you are. And I think it speaks such volumes to what you were talking about. Like Jamie Stevenson, I've never actually met her in person. I've had her on the show a couple of times when she was working in Darien, of course. But you're right. that we live in a world right now where if you are not some kind of political figurehead, and that's not deterring from who Jamie Stevenson is, I think she's a great person, but if you don't have that political backing and you're not a, quote, career politician, what chance do you have to even get your platform out there, let alone to be considered, you know, at these convention weekends? It sounds like that's what you're saying.
Well, yes. I mean, the political system is one that obviously favors the insiders. It's a system where people will obviously support somebody they know rather than somebody they don't know, so that, you know, outsiders don't, you know, really are at a huge disadvantage in the caucus-based or convention-based system that we have. And yet throughout the country, we're seeing, you know, in ordinary citizens, people from different walks of life stepping up and, you know, winning, you know, federal elections and serving in the Congress or serving in other capacities as governors and other things. And I think that you need to have, you know, a more open system. And we do have a system which is the, you know, primary-based system, which is what I'm hoping to get on. The only catch is I need to get signatures from registered Republicans in the electoral district to enable me to do that, which is the process that I'm engaged in now. It's a difficult process, and you know, you have to have people, volunteers and others to help you, and you go up to strangers and you have to see, number one, if they're a Republican, because only Republicans can sign a petition for a primary, and you get a huge amount of varying responses. Some of them are just so incredibly hostile, and it gives you a real flavor of this horrible polarization of our society, which is really very, very destructive. I mean, we need to unite as a country, and when you have people, you know, feel like so passionately on either side, I've been, you know, called evil for being a Republican, and I think it's without anybody even knowing anything about me. And mm-hmm. I think that this prejudging of people, based on what political party you belong to, is completely wrong.
Yes, I agree with you absolutely. And I think too, you make another great point, which is talking about how politics, if you start to get into that realm too much, you lose sight of what you really got into it for. And that's not for all politicians, but it has become kind of the majority. And kind of speaking to that a little bit, Michael, even convention weekend, I've had some people get on, like even Brenda Kupchick in Fairfield has said, I can't stand convention weekend. It's just a dog and pony show. And essentially, they already know who they're going to go with. And what I find troubling, kind of to your point, is, you know, I think parties have gotten to a point where they're like, all right, who's the strongest candidate to beat out the opposite party? And of course, we have a Democratic majority right now for Connecticut and even representing us in Washington, D.C. So the Republican Party is very focused on who's the strongest candidate to go up against the Democrat in that race. And do you feel like that's what's going on in this race, for example, against Congressman Himes? Were you even given a fair shot or heard out? Do you feel you were heard to go up against Hines?
I did go to the Republican town committees and I did speak, and I believe what I said was good, but I think that regardless of what I had to say, I think the decision was fairly much made up beforehand. And I think that the problem with a party-based system, you know, be deciding is you have, in the case of these conventions, where you have a less than 200 people deciding who the best candidate is for 100,000 registered Republicans in this district. And the question is, are these 176 people truly representative of the average Republican? And the second question is, are they right? And if you look historically, for the last seven elections, Jim Hines has won by substantial majorities. So I wouldn't, and of course, it's also a more heavily Democratic district than Republican. But the real people that determine the outcome of the election are the independents. So I don't necessarily agree that such a small number of people, less than 1% of, not even a tenth of a percent of the entire Republicans of the state, should be the ones making the decision. And I think that the other advantage of a primary is by voters actually seeing, you know, the candidates who are running in a primary, they get to know them and they start to get name recognition.
Mm.
The other
They make their they make their own like educated decision on it. Michael is running for the 4th District of Connecticut, who right now that is Congressman Himes, who represents that district. He's a congressional candidate. And Jamie Stevenson has already gotten the backing from the Republican Party to be their nominated candidate. But there's still that primary coming up in August. And Michael would like signatures to get the opportunity to really have his campaign out there and to be able to share what he can in the political realm. So, Michael, I wanted to give you the platform right now for a minute or two. Tell us some of the big takeaways. What would you bring to the table if you were to become the next congressman?
Well, first of all, as somebody who has a background in medicine and law, there's a lot of things going on in our government that are fairly messed up, to say the least. So, for example, our healthcare system, we're spending $4 trillion on healthcare, and yet about 25% of it, or $1 trillion, is being spent on administrative and regulatory costs rather than actually going into medical care. So one of the things that I really believe is that our government needs to become a less regulatory government, a government where businesses are allowed to flourish, where we spend the money actually where it belongs. If we were spending our healthcare dollars treating patients and taking care of people, the costs would be less, drug prices would be less, and more people would be covered for less money than we're spending today. So that's part of my background that's unique. I'm also somebody that's a fighter, and I believe that when you see we've seen this huge shift in the pendulum to the left since Joe Biden's become president, and it's happened so far and so quickly, and with many, many devastating consequences, that you need to very aggressively, shift the pendulum back to a more reasonable approach. And I would be somebody that would be much more, I would be very aggressive in fighting to return our country to a level of sanity, because I think what's going on now is just unacceptable. And look at what's happening in our economy. We have this huge amount of inflation combined with massive government spending and the government printing money, and at the same time a loss of energy independence. I mean, everybody's paying $2 or $2.50 more a gallon for gasoline than they paid 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Heating oil is up to somewhere between $6 and $7 a gallon.
Oh, that's crazy.
And it's crazy. So the average person is not going to be able to afford to heat their house properly this winter unless something happens. I mean, some of us, were able to lock in, at prices for this past winter to keep it somewhat reasonable, but even that was unreasonable. But next winter, none of that's going to be available. And then and you add the cost of food and incredibly horrible mismanagement. I mean, the fact that we have a shortage of baby formula is just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we have a border where we have so much fentanyl, which is made in China and then shipped by Mexican drug cartels into our country, killing 100,000 people a year. I mean,
Title 42 is going away on Monday. Expiring Monday. So
things are even going to get worse. And then you have all this trafficking, and whether you have human trafficking, sex trafficking, child trafficking, all those people are essentially slaves. I mean, we're essentially allowing slavery to happen in our country by allowing all this to happen, and all these other people that are indebted to mules to get them across are also indentured servants or slaves. So I mean, we have a government that's essentially tolerating and supporting slavery, and I think that my own personal opinion is that our Homeland Secretary should, and I've said this from almost 2 months already, should be impeached. I mean, he's essentially aiding and abetting all these criminal activities. That it's just unbelievable. And then
unfortunately, Dr. Goldstein, we have run out of time. But if people want to learn more about your platform, they want to put their signatures down to support having you end up on the primary ballot, you can go to GoldsteinForCongress.com. That's GoldsteinForCongress.com. And I really appreciate you coming on this morning and sharing your experience, what you're going through, and also in your platform. And good luck to you.
Well, thank you. Just one more thing. And if you want to email me at info@GoldsteinForCongress.com, if you're interested in signing petitions or volunteering to help collect signatures, I'd appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome, Michael. Good luck to you. Thank you so much. And we appreciate you taking the time to come on this morning.